You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at diageobaracademy.com. That's Diageo Baracademy.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Southern Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
5 years in a row, guys.
Yeah,
five
buddy.
Years. We did it.
Five years of Bridesmaid.
Oh, man. So those of you who might know, the top fours for the Tales of the Cocktail Spirited Awards came out yesterday. It was, I believe, yesterday?
Yes, or, yesterday.
Yeah. And the Speakeasy is on for the fifth year in a row. That means that every year that the category of Best Broadcast Podcast or Web Series, since its introduction 5 years ago, we've been nominated every single year that it's existed, which is actually... Who else can say that? I don't think anyone else can, right?
No one. Yeah. And
that's a weird way of saying, like, we're not bitter about losing.
Definitely not.
Right.
That's not our style.
I think I've said it on the air before. I'm kind of happy for us to keep getting nominated. The rules dictate that should we win, we can't even be nominated for five more years. So I'd prefer to be nominated every year and be up on the board than to win and not be on the board for 5 years.
But that's a new rule. And Greg, what did you call it?
You mean the Wanderich Mercy rule? Is that the rule that you're talking about?
Yeah, because he beat us twice in a row inside of 5 years, he and Noah. And then they retired their show. You know, they're like, yeah, we got you twice, we're out.
Yeah.
Yep.
They had a show?
We got our points. Exactly. One for each of us, we're done.
Yeah, they had a show.
Wow.
Well, let's jump right into it because I think we've got a lot to talk about today. So in the virtual studio with us, we've got a good friend and multiple Tales of the Ward top four nominee, all for best bar team, best restaurant bar at his bar, and best U.S. bartender, Chris Hanna. Welcome to the studio, Chris. Really glad to have you on.
Hey, thank you, man. It's really good to talk to you guys. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I saw you here in New York City just 2 weeks ago or so. You were here celebrating 50 Best, which you were also on that list. So you're out there crushing the, what do they call this, award season? You're really taking award season for all it's worth.
It's been a pretty cool one, man. What I loved about 50 Best was just seeing everybody again. That was awesome. That felt great.
I would agree. It really did. It felt like the first event that I've been to. I've only been to, I think, two larger events since the pandemic has been, you know, winding down, I hope. And this one felt really very reunion-y. I got to see a lot of folks I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, reunion-y. That's what I feel about Tales, and I just really can't wait for that to feel the same way. But all the awards nominations has been a little crazy, man. Like sometimes I feel weird about checking social media, all the hits and everything. And I'm just like, oh gosh.
Yeah, it's got to be flattering though, and especially for you having the bulk of your career be right there in New Orleans and be sort of at the center of it all. And we talked off air. You've been nominated for Best Bartender in the past and didn't take it. This is the first time you've been nominated for multiple awards in the same year, but you've never taken home a plate at all. Correct?
That's true. Right.
So it's time to put some plateware up on that bar.
Yeah, you know, I'm really loving the to be honest, I really like the restaurant bar one. I like that category.
Yeah, that was great. What about that category appeals to you?
I've always been about the team, man. You know, even when I was at the 75 bar, it was always about the teamwork. And so winning that James Beard was, like obviously the highest, you know, honor I could ever have in this industry. That was the absolute best. And just, you know, working together and then having guests comment on, you know, like it's fun to watch you guys work and everything, you know, it feels good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you're also for Best Bar Team itself. So both of those awards would seem pretty fitting for you. Talk a little bit about your time at the French 75 bar to kind of just give a little groundwork for the listener.
Oh, you know, I'm really proud of French 75 Bar and my efforts there. You know, it's a beautiful little room inside Arnold's restaurant. And I got there at the very beginning of the cocktail revolution, which was a pretty ideal time for me and the bar because not everybody working there knew what was going on, you know, and I knew that New York and San Francisco were starting this this cocktail, you know, revolution. I just wanted to have this one beautiful bar, you know, stay in the same, you know, realms as all the high end bars, you know, opening up like PDT, Death and Company, you know, even, you know, more Margot, you know, we were all following that wave. And I'm just glad I was able to keep being mentioned, you know, in like lists, you know, involving everybody. So I'm really proud of what I did at the French 75 Bar. It was really hard to leave. You know, I was there almost right at 15 years, you know. That was a tough decision. But, you know, Manolito is a really beautiful, cute little bar. And Jewel that we opened right after Manolito is turning out to be pretty special as well. So things are good.
Yeah, I mean, you being sort of a static figure behind the bar at Arnaud's French 75 was – for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people, sort of a home beacon. You know, I know that when I go to New Orleans for Tales of the Cocktail, my first stop is Arnaud's to grab a French 75, a Sazerac, and some pommes soufflés, yes, and see you. So, you know, you not being there now, it's changed the game a little. I still ritualistically go there, but now I have other places to come and see you. And you just mentioned the first place you opened after leaving Arnaud's French 75 is Manolito. I want to talk a little bit about that one, but then, of course, the meat of the matter today, I think, is going to talk about Jewel. But let's hear about Manolito.
Manolito is really, really, you know, kind of special to all of us because, you know, seven trips with Julio Cabrera spawned these bars, you know, like La Trova, Manolito, Madrina's, and Palomar in Portland. But Manolito, when we would go to Havana, we would all get behind the bar. Manolito would show us how to make the, you know, the Floridita and the daiquiri with the blenders. And he was running the El Floridita in Havana. And then he passed away, I believe, in 2016. And it was, you know, it was in the bartending community is so tight in Cuba. You know, we went down to several of their competitions and it was just amazing. But we when we had this little room on Dumaine in the lower quarter, we decided to open up a Cuban style bar, Cuban themed bar, bring the blenders back on the bar. And we wanted to name it after Manolito. And it really turned out pretty awesome. I mean, it's locals love it. Tourists love going. It's really service industry is really enjoying it. And we have a great staff. It's a cute little spot. We have Cuban food and blended drinks. I still have a drink on the menu, so I'm happy about that, the Bywater. But it's beautiful, man. I was there last night, actually.
Yeah, I love the style of it. It's a very small room, sort of wide open frontis, with a tight little bar and a little kind of a little mezzanine level up above. It's really adorable just to view and behold. And then the great thing, of course, is that you're in New Orleans, which means even when it's packed to the gills, you can just grab a cocktail and take a walk around the block and come back when you need another one, right?
Yeah, you know, that's actually one of the cool little secrets is you can actually get a daiquiri and just walk straight to the river. You don't really realize it, but all you have to do is cross Decatur and go around those front buildings where the French Market is, and you just go straight to the river, sit down, and have a daiquiri. Otherwise, you don't even see the river when you're in New Orleans. It's really kind of – it's weird, but that's one of the things I love about it as well.
And you can have a beignet while you're at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, right. I kind of feel like we've gotten spoiled with all these, like, with all the to-go cocktails that we have. And don't get me wrong, I'm glad that that's still a thing in the places where it is still a thing. But, like, there was something kind of magical about, like, the first time that I, like, went to New Orleans and I went into a bar and I just like, you know, just going to grab a beer and, like, hang out. And the woman just looks at me and just goes, "Do you want that for here or to go?" And I was like, "What? Oh, that's an option." And it's like, and you still kind of, you forget that that's like something that's kind of very just special and free about that town, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because that, it reminds me of like the time I guest bartended at Maison Premier's first year anniversary. And they flew me up and I had to wear my French 25 bar outfit. And it was so funny because I don't know who asked, but somebody was like kind of like playing a little prank. And he says, you know, and they're ordering drinks. And then the guy says, hey, can I get that to go? And I go, yeah. And then Maxwell grabs my arm and goes, no. No, you can't make that to go, Hannah. And I was like, I look over and the guy is just laughing. He goes, hey, I thought I'd try. I was like, oh, that's funny. Good one. Nice one.
Yeah. I mean, right. Because it's just so habitual for you after so many years being there.
Right. That was so weird. It was a weird moment for me.
Well, you know, technically there are bars in Brooklyn where you can get drinks to go. Turkey's Nest. But, you know, like, oh, awesome. It's a little different. You know, they don't really advertise that as like a New Orleans style bar, but I think, you know, I heard some rumors that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like after everyone started going back from the to-go cocktails, and this can be totally fake news, but like I heard that they were going to like review the program for like New Orleans as a city as far as to-go cocktails go. Did anything change? Because like I was like, there's no way they can change that back. People go to that city partially so they can have a drink and walk around and drink it. Was there any like, was it like just like some weird rumor that was going around? They were like, well, actually everyone's going back to like no to-go cocktails. And I heard New Orleans is going to do the same. It's like,
oh wow. No.
Yeah. I was like, that can't be true. But I think there was just a lot of, fake news going on.
You're right. I believe there would kind of be riots for that. Yeah. One. That wouldn't work. I was surprised how nicely we took the smoking ban, but that was fine. But no, the to-go drinks, that's not really going to work. It's more like a way, we don't really think that we're doing anything of a novelty. It's really kind of a way of life.
Yeah, exactly.
We just feel like if you have to like stop and it just like a skipping a record, you know,
it's not a big deal until someone makes a big deal out of it, you know?
Well, I would also argue at least a little bit that the smoking thing went down easier in New Orleans because you could still just take your beer outside and have a cigarette. You didn't have to leave your beer inside. You know, which was the problem here. People were like, I want to have my drink and my cigarette at the same time, you know, whatever.
Leaving your drink inside and smoking. And yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. Nobody's going to do that down there.
Especially if you smoke cigars.
All right. You'll be there.
It's going to be like dead, beyond dead by the time you get back.
Right.
So you got Manolito opened up and operational. And again, it's gorgeous. And man, it's a refreshing break too. When you're walking around the quarter on a hot day and then you see that thing, it's like a little oasis. You jump in there and grab yourself a blended daiquiri from a blender, which is, you know, again, I think, talk about that. Like, is there any pushback from the sort of nerdy ass cocktail world that we live in about sort of maybe what they might think of as unwinding it and going backwards and being like the daiquiri's back in the blender?
No, there was no pushback at all. They when they found out there was like, all, you know, everything was all fresh juice. It's not like the Soldier Slim you can get at the Big Easy daiquiri shop on Bourbon, you know. Everybody just kind of fell in love with it. It was, you know, frozen drinks are kind of a guilty pleasure anyway. You know, everybody eventually gets one. So everybody like walked in and was just happy to know that nobody could frown upon them for even ordering one. So it actually worked more in everyone's favor.
Right. You could be more open about your desire to have a blended drink instead of like being bashful and like, is anybody looking? Okay, I'm going to order this real quick.
I mean, everyone loves frozen drinks though. I mean, whether you like want to admit it or not, I mean, it's truth. I don't know, man. To me, it's more of a blender versus frozen drink machine kind of question, right? Because I mean, there's a lot of control with a frozen drink machine, right? I mean, you batch it out, it comes out consistently perfect every time. But I kind of like I like the show, and I like, you know, we like the show when we go to a bar. Even if you're throwing a bunch of stuff in a blender and blending it, it's part of the show. It's a different kind of show than like stirring and doing an absinthe drip and, you know, all these other kinds of things. But it's like you put your hands on it, right? And that, to me, there's a lot to be said about someone actually making the drink rather than just pulling a tap that someone else, you know, spent 5 hours batching 20 different machines. You know?
Right. You're right. And it's exact same as building the drinks, because everything's being measured. Yeah. You're really not trying to throw away like the remnants. They want everything to be the exact same amount. You know, they have the measurements are always like the amount of ice, you know, the ounces of ice, ounces of juice, the spoonfuls of sugar. And then you want to get what you pay for. So you don't want to see leftover thinking like some of your liquors, you know, right, still left in that frozen.
Yeah, exactly. Pitcher, right. Yeah. Neither party wants to see anything left in the blender, neither the bartender, nor right, the guest.
Right. Yeah. It's a craft as well.
Plus it definitely 1000%. And plus it's as Damon refers to the show, right? When Manolito is bumping and there are people kind of spilling out into the open sidewalk there, like it is a show. Like it's the blenders are going, the people are, you know, chatting, the music is playing. It's a really fun little spot.
It is, man. And one of the things I like as well, you know, the people in our circles is the photos in Manolito, everyone thinks they're stock photos because they're black and white, but they're ours actually. So you're going to recognize a lot of bartenders when you walk the walls.
That's really
cool. That's really kind of cute. Yeah, Lemaire's up there. So many people are up on the walls from all of our trips.
I don't think I ever noticed.
I know. I have to tell everybody. I was like, no, look at him. It's like, there's only one photo that's not ours. And that's of the Rubaguaya. I never can pronounce his name right. The original guy who put the blender on the bar. And,
oh, yeah. Constante, right?
Constante. Yeah.
I can never do the rest of his name either. That's why I just call him Constante.
Yeah. Right. When we go to Havana, we all go to his grave and Bill Daiquiri's with Julio. It's pretty awesome.
Nice.
It's awesome to have rituals and things that you fall back on all the time. That's amazing. And next time I'm there, I'm definitely going to – well, this soon I'm going to be there. I can't wait to get down there to New Orleans this year and come see Manolito again and then definitely come over to Jewel of the South, which is the project you opened next. And the one that's getting a lot of fanfare this year at Tales of the Cocktail, as mentioned, best restaurant bar, best bar team, and then, of course, yourself for best bartender. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. We're going to come right back and keep talking to Chris Hanna from New Orleans. Stay with us. You've heard me talk about Diageo Bar Academy on our podcast for some time now. Diageo Bar Academy is a totally free resource for bartenders, bar managers, and those in the hospitality industry. Whether you're an experienced bartender looking for new inspirations and trends, or you're just starting out, or frankly, even if you're just an enthusiast, Diageo Bar Academy online courses offer real-life skills to help you grow your career. They're always free, interactive, and even some of the advanced e-learning courses take less than 30 minutes to complete. And you can do this all on demand, whenever you're ready. All you need is a computer and be able to log on. E-learning courses cover everything from skills and techniques, basics of spirits categories, improving guest experiences, serving responsibly, creating your own personal brand, and so much more. Visit DiageoBarAcademy.com to build your skills with Diageo Bar Academy e-learning and masterclasses. Again, that's DiageoBarAcademy.com. D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Cheers.
And we're back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we have our buddy Chris Hanna in from New Orleans. Man, I love New Orleans. I know we're talking about drinks a lot today, but like, I love, you know, I've always worked in bar programs that were attached to a restaurant. And I think it's important to have food and drinks together. There's no better combination of food and drinks, in my opinion, when it comes to mixed drinks than in New Orleans. And it's just, I mean, that's just the truth. I'd say maybe New York and New Orleans. And I love going to Arnaud's and the French 75 bar because you'd have the elements together and they work so perfectly together. And it's no doubt in my mind that the new spot, Jewel of the South, obviously is up for best restaurant bar, live radio, y'all. So I want to hear about this place because I haven't had a chance to go yet. I'm still not sure if I'm going to be in New Orleans this summer for Tales of the Cocktail. So let's hear about that.
Yeah. You know, Jewel's a really, you know, cute little cottage that we bought. When we bought it, it was supposed to be turned into a guest house, but with the like crazy Airbnb laws, which are awesome in the quarter, they wouldn't give them the guest house permit, which was weird because it was, you know, guest house is a little bit different, but you know, lucky for me and Nick, the guy was just like, well, I bought this house. Now what I'm going to do with it? So he was like, well, these guys opened, you know, Manolito and they run really nice bar programs. Maybe we should have like a little restaurant. So restaurant and bar focused on the drinks first and then like we'll build a kitchen out of it. So that's what we turned Jewel into. You know, we had this really, really cool courtyard in the back. It's a two-story Creole cottage, 1830s. And we just went at it, you know, and it's been, we found our chef. The chef is from London. He worked in Australia and Paris, and he was with Nina Compton for 2 years here at Compare Le Pan, brought him over. So the food's great. We obviously lost it for 2 years of Corona. We had no kitchen, but the drinks, we initially were wanting to be like classic focused, which we have. And then we also have our own new versions of classics as well. But it's an homage to the original Jewel of the South, which is what we wanted to bring back. It was Joseph Santini's bar and tavern. So it was a restaurant and bar as well in the CBD, which was the St. Mary neighborhood. And that was mowed down like most cities neighborhood when they have to start big buildings. If you walked, I know you've walked past on this corner, you're just never going to, it's now a parking lot, but it was a Gravier and St. Charles. No, Cronulet, sorry. Gravier and Cronulet. And so when we got the opportunity to turn this little Creole cottage into a restaurant, we just wanted to bring back Santini and Jewel of the South. It was the most notable bar in the 1800s. He was obviously the most famous bartender in all of the South in the 1800s. In Jerry Thomas's book, he's the only bartender mentioned by name. He created the first sugar-rimmed cocktail and the first single-use juice cocktail, which turned into the Daisy, which turned into the Margarita, Cosmopolitan, Sidecar, yada, yada. But that's what we're doing with Jewel of the South. You know, it's great. You know, it feels good walking in. The vibe's nice. All of our, you know, our staff are, you know, well-educated about what we're doing and why it's should be an important place for people to go in the quarter.
That's amazing. I love that because I'm trying to remember who we were talking to recently. It was about 3 or 4 months ago. Guys, remember we were talking, our guest was talking about creating a dessert cocktail menu or dessert menu with cocktails and the dessert dishes, and the pastry dessert chef was like, all right, let's do the drinks first and then pair, because pairing a cocktail to say like a sweet dish is not necessarily, it's a very well understood kind of program. So what they did is they designed the drinks first and then paired the desserts to the drinks. And it sounds like that's what's going on here too, but on the savory side. Or maybe all together, right? You have the bar first and then the food follows that, which I think is a really, really interesting concept. I mean, like chefs do that with wine all the time. Might as well do that with cocktails too, right?
Yeah, which pastry place is this? That sounds pretty cool.
I can't remember. I think Greg would remember. I'm putting him on the spot.
No, honestly, I'm trying to remember too. I remember the discussion. I remember how we were talking about how people always pair, like, you know, you always do champagne at dessert, but that doesn't really work. Like right. That pairing, like champagne and like a really sweet, rich dessert doesn't work, but it's driving me nuts because I can't think of all I can think of now is the Jell-O cakes, which I know it wasn't that, yeah, but wasn't I just am stuck in a loop. Yeah, exactly.
I also can't remember. I forget these shows the minute we're done.
It'll come to me the second we log off.
Yeah. We all race out of here to go do what we have to do, and it's like, oh, okay, forgot it.
I'm kidding. We're joking. Whoever that person was,
yeah. We love you.
Sorry, I shouldn't have asked.
It was such an awesome show that we remembered the content, but not the person. But yeah, I mean, it's just an interesting idea, you know, because it's typically like in a restaurant bar. I'm air quoting. Restaurant is first, you know, so. That's typically how it's always gone. It's like the bar is part of the restaurant rather than the kitchen being part of the bar. So it's an interesting, it makes complete sense to me. I'd probably piss off a lot of chefs if I said that to their face. because let's face it, a lot of restaurant owners, the chefs are the restaurant owners, you know? So like, you know, they it's like food first for them.
It is different. It's so, I mean, because like, Even dealing with our chef, it's so interesting. It's like, no, we started this because of bartenders and because of the bar team. And, you know, it's normally it's like chef who's like part owner. And so it is a little bit little opposite. And we did that, what you just said, like kind of twofold. We didn't even have a dining room yet, which was a second level of our of the cottage. So we didn't even have we just had the bar and then the courtyard and the bar area. We brought our chef in. It took a year and a half for us to finally even get stairs up there. You should have seen us. It was our storage and we would have this big ladder.
I remember seeing that ladder. Yeah,
man, that was insane. I couldn't remember. That's climbing up there, yeah. Just like rolling over on the linoleum.
Yeah, yeah. So the OSHA guys were pretty excited about that.
Those were fun times. And then as soon as we got the steps for and the dining room opened, the pandemic. I mean, it was like less than a month after that.
Yeah. Really crap timing on that, of course. Yeah. I would like to just interject that I've been to Jewel a couple of times and it didn't even occur to me that it was a restaurant. although I definitely ate something every time I've been there. It just didn't put together. For me, it was just a bar and I had some great snacks. And even recently, one of my team went down there. Kristen, you met her. She dropped off something for you.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Right. And she came back and raved about dinner. And I was like, you had dinner? I get snacks. Okay. And she's like, no, there's a whole menu. And she went over a few things on the menu. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I got to go in there with different eyes when I go down there this year. And I'm excited to come see the second floor. Yeah.
Yeah, the chef's great. You guys will love the food. What's also fun about it is like he didn't really realize that, you know, him being from London, that he'd be working with somebody who's into Premier League football. So
right?
Yeah, so we have this bet whenever Arsenal plays Villa. I'm a Aston Villa supporter. So whenever Arsenal plays Villa, whoever wins, the other person buys them the Fuente Opus X cigar.
Well,
sadly, you know, Villa aren't as good, aren't as popular as Arsenal. So I've only received one, but you know, that's okay. So it's always good trash talking going back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. I think anytime I'm gambling because I, of course, enjoy winning, but there's the thrill of losing as well. So
yeah, you're right.
That's my fuel in life. Five times nominated, y'all.
That's I love that. That's so great. I mean, I'm kind of afraid to cheer you guys on this year. I want you guys to keep it going.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to hit that sweet spot between like bad enough to not even make it on the list, but good enough to win. You know, it's a much narrower target that we aim for every year.
To hit the top four year over year is harder than hitting number one. You're right, Greg. And I appreciate that we're doing it.
Well, let's talk about some of the drinks at Jewel and Zoe.
Yeah, let's do.
Like, what would you say? Like, that? I mean, obviously, you're in New Orleans. You've got obviously nods to classics. You can't be in New Orleans and not have, you know, respect for classic New Orleans style cocktails. But what is it that you're doing there that you're excited about? Or what is the really, chef? Really, what is the chef following?
Right on. A lot of our fun takes are. I'm not a fan of the Vucaré. Let's talk about that real quick. I mean, it's fine. I'm more of a supporter of the Creole cocktail. That's not too well known, but the Vucaré to me is kind of an average cocktail. So I've been enjoying brown butter washing with different spices, the brandy and the whiskey. And so guests like every other month we switch it up. So guests have been coming in to see like which Vucaré is there. You know, we do different brandy crustas as well. We have an awesome one called the Alcala, which is a street in Oaxaca. So it's tequila mezcal. And then there's yellow chartreuse and creme de coco instead of curacao and maraschino to balance the citrus. But the Night Tripper.
I mean, just like you chased the French 75 at the French 75 bar.
I know.
I feel like the crusta is really what you're doing at Jewel, right?
It is. But, you know, to be honest with you, I can't give up the 75, man. It's like.
Of course.
I know that it's been tortured. You know, okay, really, really quickly. There's when you look at the back bar at Jewel, there's four columns. And so when we were swiping through back bars to bring in, you know, because they're all on. They're all on websites, you know, on warehouses of all their back bars. But anyway, there's four columns at the 75 bar, you know. So being there, I don't like 15 years. I wanted those four columns behind me. So that's like a real. It's another nod to the French.
Very cool.
But we even brought the glass over too, so that everything is the same, you know.
Wow.
Got the glass, cognac, and I finally went to Australia and got my sixth continent where I've made a French 75 on.
Oh, wow.
Very cool. Yeah, that's amazing. And yeah, I totally understand bringing the glass over. Why wouldn't you? You stood behind that same bar with that same glassware, that all the same tools, measurements, et cetera. Why would you throw away all that research and work just because you moved to a new location? Like you kind of own that drink. That's your legacy to uphold.
Yeah, I agree. I want to make the glass kind of iconic, because you got chumps over there in Portland, like Morgenthaler, are trying to say it's always in a Collins with ice. So, you know, I got to keep that shit going, brother.
Agreed on chumps over there in Portland. And yeah, he does. He likes to serve in a long glass. Yeah. Everyone has their own opinion, and his is wrong. So, so anyway, I didn't mean to jump in and interrupt, but I just wanted to kind of state that, like, you definitely made that drink your own. And then I feel like, and you were about to either correct me or tell me I'm right, that the Crusta is what the sort of crust is over there at Jewel. Is that true or no?
What is the Crusta at Jewel?
Yeah. I mean, I know it's at Jewel, of course, but it's kind of like, you know, you mentioned that Santini was the first to kind of sugar rim a glass, so that sort of leads right into that drink, and so that's probably going to be part of your program kind of forever.
Oh, right? Yeah. Crusta is always on. So it's our number. It's our main classic. We just overdo it as well. Like, you know, with sugar, we got glitter sugar, four different types of sugar, gold sugar. You know, so you know, when you're. And we're using a really, very decently high-end cognac as well. I just want to make it as, you know, the special drink that it is, you know, when you make your way over to Jewel. So.
And you have caviar.
Yeah, our caviar service is awesome, yeah.
I'm a huge caviar fan. I feel like that is one of those little dishes that will go well with pretty much any cocktail.
Yeah, you're right. Especially the way we prepare it, because our chef brought back the scallop potato from so you get this fat, nice hunk of potato with the creme fraiche and then the mother of pearl spoons of caviar. He brought that back from his Australian days. That's how they do it down in Australia. So it's pretty. The presentation is pretty great.
Nice. Oh man, you know what? Like, the Crusta was always one of those drinks that got me, and I fucked around with it so many times. I wanted to do like a kind of a mashup of two New Orleans classics, where essentially it's called Absinthe Crusta, and it's basically so it's like I did, like, at one point I was doing it in a Amaro shooter, but I just hollowed out a lemon and then shoved that down into the Amaro shooter and then rimmed the top of that, so it created the lip of the glass like an extra like inch and a half, so you could actually fill the Amaro shooter up to the correct wash line with it. But it was like, that was so clunky, man. It was like, it was cool because, like, I was like, you know, the Crusta, it's got this big peel of citrus, you know, going around it. And I was like, it'd be cool if you actually were like drinking, like the rim of the glass you actually put your lips on was citrus and you were drinking. So that's what I did with that. And I thought it was so cool. But then Brian Miller came in once and he was like, you know what, man? Fun idea. Just do a big horse's neck. It's like, this is really weird. So I changed it up.
That's awesome.
Right, one of those things that just conceptually cool, functionally.
But we're like hollowing out lemons to order, because I don't know if you remember this, Souther, but at Prime Meats, we didn't pre-juice any of our juices back in the day. We cut everything in half and juiced it with a hand juicer. Like a hand clamp, not like the big Rashan thing. And it was just, I didn't think we were going to be as busy as that place ended up being, but it just ended up being a real pain in the ass. But it was kind of fun too at the same time. But we were definitely hollowing out to order with a paring knife, rolling a lemon, cutting the ends off, rolling it on the cutting board and hollowing out. And then we just had all this, like the inside of a lemon that was just, couldn't juice it at that point because there was nothing to hold on to. And like, it's so stupid, but like, to me, I've had a very strange, turbulent history with Crusta. So I'm glad that you're like taking it and going with it. And if anyone can do that, it's definitely you. So can't really wait to try that. What are some of the riffs you're doing with a Crusta?
Well, that Alcala is really, really cool. We're doing a Martinique one where we have like a coconut sugar and salted rim.
Oh, cool.
That one's pretty cool. We got them. I mean, Martinique, we made that one. Marco Dionysos in San Francisco like, immediately sends me a message. You know, I made that exact same drink in 2004. I'm like, oh my God. There's always a chump out there, but it's been fun. We've switched up the spirits. Has been cool, you know. But I wanted to ask you, like, what Frank Cisneros thought about you hollowing all those lemons out. As soon as you said prime meats, it's like,
oh yeah, he doesn't. His penny doesn't matter.
Frankie cocktails.
I haven't heard his name in so long. And then you said prime meats, it's like, oh, that's old school.
Yeah, very old school.
Yeah. That's one thing that's kind of cool about that old way off topic. The old fashioned book by Simonson is the three bars pictured in that book are prime meats, Maison, and French 75.
Yeah,
but yeah, Jules been a lot. I'm happy about the way it's being received. It took a lot of work, you know, going in every day. One thing I wanted to mention is we're now closed Monday, Tuesday, and I have to say after the pandemic. I don't know if I care about 7 days in a row anymore, man. I mean, I like my free day of walking in when we're closed. I'm the only one there doing a little bit of prep to make the week go. Does anybody else talk about these? Like,
man, it's, I think it's been a topic a lot. You know, a lot of bars that used to be open till 4 a.m. in New York have decided not to go back to that. Several bars that I know of here have gone to a reservation only system, which they didn't have before, and they're staying with it because they're optimizing their room more for those reasons. There are definitely places I've talked to. I want to get back to 7 days. Only Amore Margo in my company is back to 7 days right now, but I want to get everything back to 7 days. But there are lots of folks who are talking about exactly what you're talking about. They're realizing that they were profitable and doing well, and the staff was, you know, maybe higher morale for everybody having days off together. So I'm hearing this conversation all over the place. So glad you brought it up.
I think that's a big one. You know, just the understanding your week. You know, so many times it's like such a luxury working in the industry to have a set schedule, you know, and I know that sounds kind of insane, but like, it's true. You know, a lot of schedules, the freedom of flexibility of a schedule means that someone's taking off and then that's going to alter your schedule for that week. Right. I mean, like, and that's cool. We all do that for each other, but once you get a set schedule and more importantly, like set days off, man, that does wonders for your mental health and your physical health.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Exactly. And I never really thought about it, you know, working in the industry for over 26 years and then going into 2 years of that and then coming out being like, oh wow, 3 days off. That's amazing. You know, but I mean, obviously I don't have it off now, but these 2 days of being closed have been kind of cool because we were actually taking like, you know, fun field trips. We went to like a sugar refinery all together, you know, we went to the brewery, swamp tour, you know, it's been right. So that's been kind of cool.
I mean, and those are the kind of things that forge a team and then get you recognized for best bar team.
I like it.
Right. So the payoff is still there. I would ask you this. Are you going to be, this is selfish. Are you going to be open Monday, Tuesday during Tails?
Yeah, we have to, man.
Okay, good.
And we want to, because we have good friends that wanted to come and have little parties, you know, at the place. So yeah, that week, definitely Monday and Tuesday. That was never even going to be an option. That's funny.
Yeah.
Good. Happy to hear that. Because I'm definitely going to be staying nearby and I think I'll be popping in, with some regularity because I scanned over your menu online and it looks great. And I want to come and see not only the drinks, but the food as well. I'm going to pay attention this time. I did see on the menu that you've got a section called, I can't remember what it was called, Diamonds in the Rough or something like that.
Oh yeah. We were just wanted to find a way to like use more of the, you know, high end spirits. We get some spirits, at an auction. So making the upper crust, is cool. Kind of, yeah. With the cognac from the '60s is kind of, you know, kind of fun.
That's great.
Yeah,
so
you got four or five drinks in that list that are a little bit more expensive, but they're made with special products. And that's, I love that. I love that. I think that's becoming more and more common, out there. And I love seeing it every time.
Yeah, it is cool. We got the rum we got from the '60s from Bacardi, and the gilded Cuban instead of the old Cuban. It's pretty nice.
Cool.
Yeah, it's lovely.
And then, you know, you do have caviar service on the menu and you do serve drinks and it's a common. It's becoming more and more common out there. I think because of some of the consortium holdings places out in San Diego, and of course Temple Bar here in New York. Are you going to offer caviar bumps with cocktails?
Caviar. That's funny.
Have you not seen that? Oh, it's amazing. So the martini list, say at Temple, has an upcharge of, I think, I don't know, $14, $15, $16, whatever it is. And it just says, add a caviar bump to your martini. And then they come bar side or table side with two mother of pearl spoons and a dish of caviar. And they make a little canal and they put it on your hand so you can do a bump of caviar with your.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. We are not. We should. We have not done that yet.
I think you should take it and run. It's an easy upsell. It's not hard to get someone who's drinking a delicious martini to say, yeah, a little bite of caviar to go with this would be great.
Yeah.
Nice. I'll mention that today, actually, when I go in. That's funny.
I hope they're on the menu when I come, because I'll definitely do a few.
Tails is going to be a little difficult, but.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe it's bar only during Tails.
Right. Awesome.
Well, listen, we are winding down to the end of our time here. I want to make sure that people know how to follow along with Jewel of the South, Manolito, your shenanigans. You got Instagram handles that you want to pass out to the listener?
This is Manolito Nola, Manilto, ManolitoNola.com. I mean, not .com, but it's the website. But Instagram is at Manolito Nola, and Instagram Jewel Nola. For Jewel of the South. And then I'm count_Hannah at Instagram.
Dude, they have a cocktail called Night Tripper on the menu, by the way.
I was going to say, well, when you were asking.
Yeah, that's been around for, yeah, talk about that. You were about to talk about it.
I was actually going to mention that when you said not classics, but yeah, that Night Tripper was my favorite long-standing cocktail on the menu,
right.
Both at French 25 and Jewel. So like that was my flask cocktail, you know, when I would go to Cru de Vue, and I've never named it. I just built it always in the flask, went out with that one year. Dr. John was king of Cru de Vue. It was 2010. And I've been making that, you know, flask cocktail for several years then. But when I ran up to him, man, I was so excited, like a little kid. I couldn't believe it. You know, I was like, throw me something. And he threw me one of his cups that I still have. And then like when his float went away, I was just like, man. I pulled my flask out and I took a sip and I was just like,
it's the Night Tripper.
I'm naming it. Yeah. And it was super perfect.
That's
for him because of the Strega, the witchiness, you know, Dr. John was way into voodoo. So it's.
Yeah. And also in the song Night Tripper, he talks about having all the things that will soothe your ails and, you know, like it's perfect, perfectly named, perfectly situated in the timeline and the experience. Cocktail.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I got to serve him as well. But I got pictures with him. Nice. Yeah, Dr. John is definitely one of my heroes here in New Orleans.
Same.
I even drank the Night Tripper when I went to his viewing in the Orpheum Theater. Walked up, took a sip, patted the casket, and walked out.
Damn.
Yeah, he was definitely one of my favorites. He even actually texted his daughter the Night Tripper recipe when I told him I made the cocktail. And it was funny because he had a flip phone. It took him so long to text. And I was just like, I'm going to sit here the whole time. I mean, I feel bad I'm wasting his time, but he was so excited. His daughter was a bartender in Vegas and he texted her the recipe. I was like, this is awesome.
That's incredible.
Hell yeah.
Well, tell you what, maybe as soon as we get off the air, you can give us the recipe. We'll put it up in the show notes and we'll get the Night Tripper out there to all the peoples.
Awesome.
But we are definitely at the end of our time here. Loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for spending some of your time with us today. And I very, very much look forward to seeing you on your home turf in New Orleans in a couple of weeks and spending a lot of time at the bar at Jewel of the South and definitely walking by and getting some daiquiris at Manolito.
Right on. This was great, man. Thank you.
But that's it for this episode of The Speakeasy. Log on to heritageradionetwork.org to check out many, many short shows just like this one. There's a Beating Heart. I think the Beating Heart is actually gone, Damon. You keep mentioning it, but I don't think it's there on the new website.
I'm trying to resuscitate. Yeah.
You're trying to resurrect the Beating Heart.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's plenty of links on there for you to donate to keep shows like ours and many others on the air. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
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 So you don't shun the devil with your rock.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe. It's gonna get you some.